Hi everyone. So I'm going to talk about Rich Dad Poor Dad today, and I'm going to tell you why I think, even though there's some good aspects about the book, it's not particularly the book which should be on the top of your reading list. So first of all, let's talk about the positives about the book. He's absolutely right in saying that real estate is a liability and not an asset unless you use real estate as buy-to-let, or you find a way of using real estate as an asset. A great example, if you've got a house, you've always got the chance that your boiler's gonna break or the roof's gonna cave in or whatever, or even something much less extreme than that. And also, the bigger your house, the bigger the bills, the bigger the potential liability. Think about it, if you've got a mansion, the chance that just once a year you're gonna have a big unexpected cost is much higher than if you just have a nice one bedroom flat in the city center. So he's right about that. And he's also right to say mentality is key. What is true, and I've seen it time and time again, is that people who come from poor backgrounds, even if they become wealthy, often think getting wealthy and staying wealthy is for other people. I've talked a lot about how many celebrities have gone broke. And I think even though one of the reasons is that, the spending habits, which I've spoken about before, I think one reason also there is, say many footballers or people from working class backgrounds, a lot of the time when they get money, they assume almost psychologically they're not going to keep hold of it. Whereas if you think about it, if you came from a rich family or even a middle class family where you've gradually seen your parents and grandparents get wealthy through gradually accumulating assets in the market, your mentality is very much going to be, well, people around me have got wealthy and they're not high income, so why can't I do it? So he's absolutely right about that. And finally, I would praise him in terms of, from a marketing point of view, he's done something which 99% of finance books never do. He has achieved something which has gone mainstream. He sold about 30 million books, and hardly any books in finance ever sell that many. So he should be complimented for that. I mean, because finance is not a sexy subject, right? So that's fantastic. But what is negative, I think, about the book is this. First of all, he says that being a salaried employee basically is for losers. Now, if you just look at the statistics, most of the people in the top 10%, especially in the top 1%, are actually salaried employees. Now, of course, these days, the difference between a salaried employee and self-employed, it's become a bit blurred. So for example, if you're a CEO or you're a footballer, often you have your salary, but then on the side you have your, I don't know, your endorsement company, or you have a company on the side. Likewise, many people in executive level positions, even if they're not the CEO, but they're maybe making $200,000 or $300,000 a year, often have stock options and so on. But the point is, unless you go to the top 0.1%, actually, most of the top 10% and the top 1% are salaried employees. Top 10% is a great example, right? Most people are things like accountants, I don't know, young doctors, lawyers, and even when you go into the top 2%, there's a lot of lawyers, doctors, maybe even occasionally head teachers of schools. The idea that most people in the top 1% or 2% are business owners is simply not true. We're not in the 18th century anymore, where most people are business owners of inherited wealth. Business executives statistically make up most of the top 1%. He's right to say, yes, it isn't easy to get to that top 1%, but getting to the top 10% is. But let's not forget, it's actually not easy at all to actually start a business. 90% of businesses fail, and another 5% just do okay. It's only 5% or so that do very well. So it's by no means certain that actually the best way to become wealthy is through self-employed work. And also, most of the people who set up a successful business, what do? They have 3 to 5 to 10 years where they're a recruiter, an advisor, or they have any other job. And then once they get that life experience, that work experience, they use those client contacts, those networks to start their own business. So actually, most of the successful business people in that top 1%, first of all, they use the salary job as almost a stepping stone. It gives them a little bit of capital, their network, and so on. Very, very, very few people are like Zuckerberg, where they just come straight out of university, they make it big. So most of the top 1% either are salaried employees or spend 5 or 10 years in salaried employee positions. That's the first point. Now, secondly, he says a lot of things which are just factually inaccurate. So when it comes to investing, I would actually be very surprised if he's picked up one book which is any kind of academic book about investing, i.e. from the Journal of Investing or Journal of Finance or whatever, because he says things which anyone who does even a bit of research can show is not true. Like, he's a gold bug. But as I've said before, gold is not an investment. It just holds its value But, you know, $1 invested in gold 200 years ago would be worth $27 now. In the market, it would be worth millions. So saying that people should invest in quote-unquote real assets is just silly. And also, he also advises people to do other silly things like stock pick and market time. He seems to think he can time markets, know the best way to get go into markets. That's simply not true. And finally, let's just do some maths, because he made a comment online where he said getting a 10% return is not good. You should be aiming for at least a 20% return. But however, when I looked online, his wealth is $80 million. He actually was bankrupt at one stage, which is quite ironic, but he has came back from that, which he deserves credit for. But when you work out something, you can find out something. Either he himself has not gotten 20% returns, and or he has overspent. Why? Let's do the maths. He's 71, and if he would have started with the first $100,000 he would have made, you know, when he was a young man, and he would have added just $30,000 a year, $2,500 a month to the pot, he would be worth $50 million or more today if he had compounded for 50 years. However, if he had compounded for 20 years, he'd be worth $2.5 billion. All right, you might say, well, 50 years, but that would have meant he would have started at 21. Well, let's even say it's 30 years. You can see where I'm going here. He himself, it's impossible that he himself has made 20% returns on average, unless he has had very bad spending habits, which meant that he's only getting the compounding effect on a small amount of his wealth. What he has done is he has increased his wealth, but when you consider how much income he's made, he hasn't actually increased his wealth that much. He could be a billionaire, just getting 10% probably by now. So his figures don't add up. And as I've said before, Warren Buffett's the richest person, well, not the richest person in the world. He's the third richest person in the world, but he's the richest investor in the world. He has only gotten, I put only in inverted commas, 20% for like 70 years. Now, at the end of the day, if it was so easy to get 20%, there'd be loads of people as wealthy as Buffett, because there's loads of people who are 85, 90, 95, but there aren't loads of people. So what he's saying about 20% returns is clearly nonsense. It is possible to get 20%, 30%, 40% over a short period of time, but to keep that up for 30 or 40 years is statistically impossible, which is actually shown by the fact that he himself hasn't got those kind of returns. So what I would suggest is people read the academic evidence first, because he does have reasons to be given this advice. There's nothing wrong with him making money from doing seminars and so on and so forth. But you have to remember, someone like Google, someone like Buffett, somebody like an academic researcher, they don't have a reason. They're not trying to gain from their advice. There's nothing wrong with him trying to gain from his advice. But the point is, really, when you look at it in total, it's a very, very interesting book. I think he should be complimented on the book. But as Soros once said, George Soros had a great quote. He said, investing shouldn't be interesting or sexy. You're probably losing money long term if you do that. Investing, good investing, should be boring. And actually, most of the best investment books are extremely boring, or only read by a few hundred or a few thousand people.